I'm John Barrett Ingalls, and this is The How, The Why, presented by 1888. Every week, we connect with artists, authors, and innovators in the world of publishing and literature to discuss their creative process and creative purpose, and explore the evolution of the industry. 1888 serves as a regional catalyst for the preservation, presentation, and promotion of cultural heritage and literary arts. Let's get connected.
Hello and welcome to The How, The Why, brought to you by 1888. My name is John Barrett Ingalls, and today we are connected with Jordan Rothacker, one of our 1888 authors and author of the newly published And Wind Will Wash Away from Deeds. Jordan, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us.
Thanks. It's great to be here to talk to you.
I want to call you Dr. Jordan Rothacker, because that's exciting. Can I officially do that? Is it official? Can I officially call you doctor?
You can, but usually ask people. I don't ask people not to, but it's not something I go around being called. I'm a doctor of comparative literature, so
sure.
Not the most useful doctoring,
Right. Is there a doctor on the plane? Yes, but I might not be able to help. But thank you, Jordan, and great work. So your newest book just came out. Congratulations. It's a lot of fun to read, and it takes you down multiple rabbit holes. I know it's something that you had started about 10 years ago. But let's talk about that beginning stages of you as a writer. Like I read on your bio that you were working on this, started this as you were getting your master's in religion. At that point, when you were going to school for religion, was that something that you knew you wanted to be? Was it just like I want more information to help me be a better writer, or was writing something on the side? And when did you know, writer, that's what I'm going to do?
A lot of questions in there.
I know.
I don't know if there's one story to unpack them all, but I'll treat all. Like, I actually did the master's in religion as research for the book.
Okay.
I'd actually, the first chapter of this novel I wrote when I was 19, summer between, college years, and I thought, I'm just going to write like a pulp detective novel, something to do with the summer. So I wrote the first chapter, and then I got distracted, and I didn't keep going. But I had this first chapter, I had this character, or at least the beginning of this character, and it struck me later that if I'm going to do this, if I'm going to write this first novel of mine, and commit to this work, it couldn't be something that I thought of as, a pulp novel. It couldn't be something I was kind of doing as a knockoff. And if I was going to do it, I would have to take it as seriously as I think, literature should be taken. So I, years later then, I guess around 2003, actually 2002, I buckled down, rewrote the first chapter entirely. Actually, I rewrote it again earlier this year. changed a whole lot from it. It's been through many stages. So yeah, I rewrote the first chapter and, started drafting out where this whole book would go. And also, so not only, figuring out how to write what the book is, but figuring out how to write a book was part of the process. And having the character be a detective was, in a way, kind of also leading myself. Like, him trying to figure out the mystery of this thing that happened was also me trying to figure out the mystery of how to make a big, long work, how to make a novel. I've written many short stories, written many poems. I've always got a mixture of perfectionist and laziness that's there in most things in my life. And so you know, it's easy to craft a poem or short story where you can mull over every single word and still it doesn't take you forever. But a novel, the idea of, you know, a 400-page novel, you know, 170,000 words, seemed pretty daunting. So it took 3 years. Finished in 2005. And then when Deeds wanted to publish the book, that's when I had the crazy luxury of being able to sit down with the text 10 years later, 10 years more of wisdom and writing practice and reading under my belt to actually edit the whole entire thing and be as brutal as possible. And I lost about 20 pages of it. But I'm very happy with the form it's in now. And so, you know, that edit I couldn't have done 10 years ago. I wouldn't have been able to look at the text after 3 years of working on it with such an eye. And would have, you know, had a hard time with, like, maybe an editor wanting me to change things. Also, I was a bit of a brat after 3 years of working on this thing about it.
Sure. It's precious. Yeah.
Yeah.
But so
that's the answer to I actually came to Georgia.
That answers all of your questions. It was really good.
I came to Georgia to do a master's in religion. I was living in New York before. I went to college in New York and stayed there after working at magazines. But I came to Georgia to do the master's in religion as research for the book and be close to Atlanta so I could do the field work and interviews and that on-the-ground research for the book also.
Did you have a relationship to Georgia before that?
Yeah. I mean, I moved to Georgia when I was 7. And so New York till 7. Brief stop over in Spain and France for 4 months. had some wanderlust in my parents that they had to get out of them. And then Georgia. So Georgia till I went to college. And so this book is really kind of my I couldn't write about Atlanta until I left, until I was in New York. I couldn't read Faulkner. I couldn't really read Southern literature until I got out of the South. And so that reading Faulkner and falling in love with Faulkner in New York set me up really well to finally start writing about Atlanta from the distance.
Was getting the degree and, like, signing yourself up and making that commitment, was that kind of a way to, like, force your hand to focus on this? Or was it, like, because that's a big commitment just to get research for a book.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it was also, I mean, setting me up then for what's become, you know, my career. I didn't want to teach. I wanted to be like a research assistant, but I was given a teaching assistantship. So I was teaching classes my second semester of my master's. And then they kept me on after I finished the degree as a part-time instructor. So I taught for 3 more years in the religion department before jumping back into school to do the PhD in comparative literature. Well, I just kept continuing to teach. So I taught for 11 years at the University of Georgia, which was, you know, good structure for, you know, time to be able to write and also to keep learning and reading and stuff. I mean, not like I wouldn't have if I wasn't in an academic setting. But the setting, you know, it helped. I mean, it was helped to be around all the different disciplines.
Now, with Pitt and No Other Stories, did that come after that, the concept and idea, did that come after the master's degree and working in that academic field? Did that hope develop that story, or was that something that had been bouncing around in your head before that?
I mean, it's a book that I wrote, you know, more recently, I mean, other than the 10 year later edit, more recently than In Wind Will Wash Away. So it was during an academic, you know, time. I mean, I guess I've been pretty, you know, academic for most of my adult life. Mm-hmm. In the Pit and No Other Stories, you know, each chapter or story, you know, quote unquote, since it's really one whole novella, and I'm just kind of teasing the reader with this idea that you're reading separate stories until, of course, they all start converging. One of the stories, each chapter of story is kind of written with a particular trope of American literature, or, you know, that I like. So there's, you know, the detective story. There's kind of a sci-fi. There's the kind of the small town gothic story called The Pit. That's the, you know, beginning one. And there's actually one, a story in there that's academic, is this style. So not necessarily a trope of American literature, but a different style of writing, and one that, you know, I've come to know. So it's posed as if it's someone giving a lecture on
right.
An African diaspora
yeah.
character that becomes, you know, kind of like a retelling of a slave narrative. And I mean, I taught African diaspora literature for 6 years in the Department of Comparative Literature. And so that's, you know, one of my, I guess, I mean, it's weird to say loves, because quite often there's really dark and awful stuff in there. But it is one of my, you know, things I've studied and taught, and pretty vital to our history.
I'm curious about that, because it was such a great way of, like, having these short stories take you through a tale of what exactly is happening. How did you come up with, not that concept, but, like, what was the initial idea? Did you know that you were going to tell this entire story through short stories? I don't even want to say story, but it's like create this world through short stories with all these interconnected pieces.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of think of The Pit and no other stories as like Nova Express or Cities of the Red Night by Burroughs as my book kind of dumbed down Burroughs. It's not as out there in any of the different ways Burroughs can be, you know, with the cut-up method or the, you know, his how abstract he can be sometimes, or surreal, or even as graphic with the stuff he's treating. But I was thinking of his work, and I was thinking of Calvino, If on a Winter's Night a Traveler, which has the same kind of, like, meta-narrative that adjoins little pieces of things. And as I mentioned before about being kind of perfectionist and lazy, I did have a writing teacher my freshman year in college who, she turned me on to both Calvino and Borges because they only wrote short stuff or built a novel like Calvino did out of, you know, individual small pieces. And she said, you would like these guys. They're like you. They're very creative and very lazy. So I got into them both from that angle of, you know, what you can do with economy. And, you know, The Pit could have kept going. Like, I could have kept, you know, adding more to any of those storylines,
sure.
weaving in more storylines. But I like the idea of keeping it as a tight novella. And the term I use in it is I refer to it as a micro-epic, that it scales big, but it's 110 pages and you can, you know, read it in an hour. You know.
Right. Did you in your outline of the story, did you know where every piece was going to go, or was that something that, like, well, you got all these pieces and now it's about playing and putting them in the right place and finding that flow?
I knew I had a bunch of them written, and then as I was, you know, finishing it, pushing it through to complete this thing for publication, I had the ones that hadn't been written, I knew what they would be about. But yeah, like what you bring up there, one of the biggest tricks or the difficult parts was the order and how to assemble them. And that's why, again, like that short form, this novella or micro epic, was really fun, because you've got less material to, you know, yoke together. And I kept thinking of someone like Steve Erickson, who has these amazingly well plotted books that, you know, are almost like, you know, Mobius strip is usually what you know, mention a blurb on the back. And so these, you know, in dealing with, you know, just 18 little pieces that comprise The Pit, planting the seeds within those individual pieces of, you know, trickling out what's really happening, what's going on, the actual, you know, full meta narrative that's, you know, that's there, and, you know, kind of giving away little bits of the reveal was much easier to do with something that's small.
Sure.
And so you can bring all those worlds together, and also you can use the same words over and over to kind of keep that going. There are a few different, like, key words that kind of pop up in all the different stories, no matter how different the writing style is or the themes are of each of the stories.
Right, and then in a shorter form, it's easy to go back to find reference of, like, wait a minute, that's the character from,
mm-hmm.
okay, all right, okay, yeah, instead of having to shuffle through hundreds of pages to find that other reference point. It was a lot of fun
yeah.
to read.
And, oh, thanks. I mean, There was, you know, there was the making of charts. You know, I do a lot of the charts and lists. I mean, and this goes back to when I was first writing the Wind book. You know, I've always read since a very early age. I've always loved literature, and not just the reading of literature, but the reading about it. You know, reading biographies or autobiographies on authors that I like, interviews with them. It's funny, like, though I have this master's, this PhD, I still kind of just think of myself as an autodidact. Most of what I've learned is from going to the index or the back of a book or reading interviews and then watching that snowball, you know, who did this author who I like read and like, and then going and reading and liking those people. So when I was writing, you know, the Wind book, my first novel, I was trying to figure out how to do it, you know. Do I just sit down and start like Murakami, you know, Haruki Murakami, and just start with that first sentence and see where it goes? And I've interviewed Tom Robbins. He works like that, really slowly, one sentence at a time, makes it perfect, moves on to the next one, kind of lets the story develop as one's writing. And that didn't sit as well with me. I needed to do research, I needed to do planning. And so I got really into Faulkner's method, or what I, you know, read about Faulkner's method, about just knowing everything about what he's writing. You know, drawing maps of locations, drawing floor plans of where scenes are set, you know, actually tracing like the walk a character might take. And so I started working from that. So every chapter of the Wind book, you know, I've got the moon sign of what's going, you know, for that day. I've got the time of day that the action's happening. You know, the calendar, you know, everything lined up, and like, you know, a page for each chapter with outline and, you know, character list. And I mean, I read somewhere that Faulkner knew the full bio, like dossier bio on every character he had, even if it's just a bellhop in one scene and he might not speak, Faulkner knew all about that bellhop's backstory. So I tried to work from that, and eventually you get to a point of being comfortable within the text that I didn't have to, like, look at those notes or didn't have to necessarily, you know, do more work because you've got this body of research and planning that you've gone in with.
Sure. Well, and aside from that, there's the bigger, grander research of, you know, this religious aspect, the cults, the divine feminine, you know, which I'm sure through your master's program was there, but I mean, that's not something that is easily ingrained, right? I mean, were you constantly having to go and reference and research for everything that you were putting in?
Yeah. I mean, it was, and I enjoy that stuff. It's fun. I mean,
sure.
There's some things that are in that book that are cut directly from reality. You know, you change the names a little bit, or so there's some portraits of, you know, either friends of mine that I knew in Atlanta, or you know, people I interviewed, you know, for the book. So there's some direct portraits there that maybe that person reading the book would realize it was them, but otherwise, you know, most people wouldn't know. The research was, and so in preparation for this conversation today, I got back out the big file folder from this book, you know, with the composition book in it, with each chapter diagrammed, and then, you know, I've got like a folder on text notes, I've got a folder on maps, dates, diagrams, I've got a folder on mythology/gods, a folder on spontaneous human combustion, folder on prostitution.
Jeez.
Yeah, so it was, I don't know, one of my first, like, big literary loves was James Joyce. And then when I was 17, I was in the International James Joyce, you know, Foundation. And, you know, the kind of, I didn't want to take, you know, as many years as this book that he would take, you know, he only produced 6 works, you know, in his whole life that got published. But that's, you know, that's kind of where I come into doing this, you know, from loving and admiring Joyce. And, you know, how to pack in the stuff that I like in a text into a text of my own. So there's a whole lot in this book that, like, most people reading it wouldn't get, and that's totally fine. Like, I didn't want to do Ulysses or Finnegan's Wake. I wanted to do something that people can still most anyone could just enjoy reading. And at the same time, though, kind of to weave, or the term Joyce used, larding, to lard into the text, kind of references and puns and jokes and little symbolism stuff that if you do get, you know, maybe you'll enjoy, and maybe you'll start noticing more stuff. But they were, you know, really just there to amuse myself and who else, you know, whoever else that reader might be.
Sure. Well, and you have this whole rich world of modern pop culture that is woven in as well, with references to the Smurfs and an episode about Father Time and Mother Nature. It's a lot of fun. Now, with all of that planning, with all of that mapping, are you still surprised at, are there still elements of like, oh, that surprised me, that action that character took? I wasn't expecting mm-hmm. that. Or is it just getting what's in your head onto the paper?
I don't know, there's still the joy that I was still experiencing. I mean, I enjoyed the research and I enjoyed the planning, but there's still the joy of like making the sentences and following the lead of the characters at a certain point. So the planning is nice because, you know, I never have like writer's block as far as like what to write. Sometimes I've, you know, like, you know, what to put down. Sometimes I have writer's block of like which thing to work on. And I've got usually a lot of projects going at once. So a novel that big with very different, you know, things going on in each chapter, what was nice then is like if I maybe got a little bored with one chapter or I had an impasse of research, I can go work on and write another chapter and still be working every day. And so, you know, the end, you know, was a little bit, you know, was worked on along the way. I might have, you know, put like maybe did some finishing on the end after I wrote everything else, but otherwise there were some middle chapters that might have gotten written after the last chapter. But there's still that joy in watching what comes out. And then in my reread that I did 10 years later, it was a really kind of pleasant experience of like, you know, I was brutal in editing young Jordan. There were a lot of precocious, long, there were these windy, windy sentences, you know, to kind of, you know, keep the theme of the book going. And you know, from my being enwrapped by, you know, Faulkner. But so a lot of those just got chopped down or just tossed. Anything that made me cringe, gone. So I didn't edit anything as far as like content, really. I just cleaned up the prose. I gave it a big facelift. But there were a lot of sentences that didn't get touched. So I was like, you know, very pleasantly, I don't know, surprised, pleased to read something I wrote 10 years ago and to not actually remember, you know, some of the individual sentences, but to like them, you know, to go, wow, I don't remember choosing these words, but they work really well together. And it's a neat joy to kind of feel that distance with your own work and to like it though.
Yeah, I get that experience a lot. It's almost like, did I write that? That was really good. I don't remember writing it. That was a good one.
Good, you know, a little pat on the back to yourself.
Mm-hmm. But now, in comparison to Pitt and no other stories, you had these for And Wind Will Wash Away, you have these notebooks, you have this research, you have these charts. Did you go into that much depth to write Pitt and no other stories?
No. There was some charts on just, you know, listing the chapters and, you know, like which kind of tropes they were and like, you know, when I was kind of constructing of like, oh, yeah, I want to have a nautical chapter, you know, because I like pirates, you know, and that actually kind of got tied in with the slave narrative, the second part of the slave narrative chapter. But kind of the test that the Pit was about for myself as an exercise, part of the how, was actually to write fast. These different styles or concepts of each chapter story in it are things I like a lot or know really well. I'd published the first four pieces, you know, the actual first four that are in there at The Exquisite Corpse, Andrei Kojevsky's, you know, Lit Mag online a few years ago. And I'd cited him in a paper and I sent him the paper and we had a nice email exchange and he liked the paper. And so I told him I also write fiction. And so he said, well, you know, we're open to you. And I sent him that and he liked it. So So I had this novel excerpt out there, and when Black Hill Press was interested in it, it was at a point where, you know, I really hadn't done anything more than those first four pieces. I'd thought a lot about it in the 3 years between when they got written and then published, and then last year when Black Hill Press 1888 was interested, because someone had kind of come out of that run and they had a spot, I said yes without it being done, and I had a month, and so I wrote 80% of the pit in a month, and it was a
wow.
Great experience. It was so much fun to, like, you know, because I've always said, like, you know, part of my perfectionist and laziness thing and all the insecurities that are involved in that is that if I ever had an agent or if I ever had, you know, some publisher who likes my work and wants it, that's all I need to motivation to finish something. You know, I've got a lot of half-written books and a lot of started books. And so they liked it and they wanted it. And so that's all I needed. So I had a month to, and I promised my wife it wouldn't get in the way of, you know, working on the dissertation. So I, you know, focused a little more on this than the dissertation that month. But, yeah, I just kind of enjoyed this, like, the pace of and the different worlds of each one. And the beauty is, of course, at the size of that, 110 pages, these 18 little pieces, is that you can go into that world, that style of writing, that theme, that trope that's going on there, and dive in and, like, get all into it and really enjoy it, and then you move on because it's only 5 pages
right.
long, maybe, or 10 yeah. pages. And so it's so these are all things that are just kind of in my head and that I enjoy. And so, you know, the motivation was let's just dive in and do this fast because, you know, I've been thinking about this thing for 3 years. I can just enjoy spitting it out and watching it, you know, show up on the page. And then, yeah, it was a great experience. I mean, at the end of the month, I was, you know, I turned it in and I thought, I want to do that again. I just want to keep going. If I can just do that all the time, that would be wonderful.
What are you working on now?
I
mean, I'm sure you have multiple projects, but is there one that's
yeah.
kind of drawing most of the attention?
Well, while I wrote my dissertation, I was writing a novel along the way of kind of like from the same research. I just, you know, I can't, you know, maybe my mind just won't, you know, not multitask. But so a lot of the kind of themes that ran through my novel, in my dissertation, I started putting into a novel, which is kind of staged like a journal, you know, like it's a found mm-hmm. object. There's an author, it's called My Shadow Book, and there's an author of the work. And I list myself as, you know, the editor of this thing as a found object. And so it's, you know, kind of, since it's done as a journal, you know, some entries are just a quote, some are just a line, some are, you know, full, long, you know, pieces. And, but it's something that I, you know, would work on along the way on the side. I kept one notebook in my back pocket that was this guy's journal. And so kind of like method acting as I thought, you know, things that fit this character, I would write them down. And so that's been in the works for a while, and I might be close to tying that up sometime soon. But yeah, there are a few other books that I've been working on for years that I'm kind of often just waiting for the right motivation to you know, push through and finish a work.
Now, with all of these different styles, I mean, you kind of touched on this a little bit with Pitt but with all of these different styles of writing, and even including more of the journalistic style that you've worked on as well, how do you approach the actual sitting and writing? Like, what is your routine to sit at that computer? And does it change depending on what you're working on?
Hmm. Well, it's funny. I used to have a column in a magazine where I interviewed writers who wrote longhand. And actually the term is freehanding, because it's shorthand or longhand is included in that. And I interviewed Chuck Palahniuk once, and he writes longhand, you know, he did at the time, and he, you know, doesn't use a computer for it. I was telling him that as I, you know, worked on this, you know, this Wind book, that I would work on it while I had an office job working at a magazine, and I was just always scribbling notes down, lines directly, some full paragraphs, you know, throughout the day. And then when I got home from work, you know, 9 to 5, go home, I would write for an hour every day to get my, you know, 1,000 words in every day. And I would sit down at that computer and always knew exactly what I was going to write because I had these notes all day long that I was working on. And so Chuck Palahniuk had said to me that he didn't think I actually wrote on a computer. He thought I was, you know, that's just where I'm typing, you know, but they assured I actually write, you know, freehand like him. But, I mean, there are things that I'll do, just sit down and directly write on the computer. So to answer your question, I don't know if it's different for journalism or academic. Like, the kind of the style is, the strategy maybe of how I approach a work, if it's journalism or a short story or a novel, is different. But my scribbling notes all day long, while I'm out in the world, and then typing them up and then going from there with the notes, totally the same, no matter if I'm writing a journalism or an academic paper or short story or novel. It's, just kind of, I mean, I don't have hypergraphia, but I'm always with a pen on me, and I've always got, you know, something, you know, typed in Notepad in my phone or written on my hand. Or so I'm fine with going between any of those different, you know, means or methods or, you know, instruments, but my kind of always working on stuff. And so when I do, the hardest thing, though, is actually getting me to sit down at the computer and write, because that's when I'll produce the most. But that's where, like, the laziness kicks in and stuff.
Sure.
And the actual discipline of sitting there. But I don't let myself off the hook because I'm always working. I'm always, you know, jotting stuff down.
Do you get distracted? Is it just the distraction sitting at the computer, or is it just like the mental will to get the fingers to actually type out the words, and then once you get into it, it's flowing?
Yeah, I mean, like it's the, you know, I don't want to go to bed, you know, I don't want to,
yep,
I don't want to, I don't want to do my work, you know.
Yeah,
yeah, and like, you know, and so I'm constantly always working on stuff, and it's funny, is because that's kind of what that whole that novel I mentioned, my shadow book, it was based out of, like, me, I don't know, being pretty depressed of, like, not having this, you know, the Wind novel. I mean, it's been done pretty, you know, for 10 years, not having that published yet, not getting stuff published, and working on a degree that, you know, what am I going to do with it? You know, am I going to keep teaching? I'd rather, you know, I'd like teaching, but also like to be able to pay to write too. And so, having a hard time to be, and motivation, and being a little depressed about that kind of work life art situation. So the only thing I was able to do for like 3 years was, you know, take these little notes. And eventually, of course, I can't let myself off the hook like that. So a novel grew out of it, you know, of this, you know, characters, you know, rants, and then eventually, you know, the character really developed, and, you know, other characters in his world were peopled within, you know, into the journal. So that was, you know, this inability to sit and work. I was actually working. But yeah, it's just the, you know, like as a child, always had a hard time going to bed, still kind of do now, this kind of rage against the dying of the light, you know, that, you know, one, it makes tomorrow come, and, you know, you got to do stuff, you know, the next day,
sure,
responsibilities.
Yeah.
And then also, you know, I don't want to give up on the day yet. So yeah, sitting down to write. But I'm always proud of myself and happy when I do, and it's, you know, feels good, you know, it's like going to the gym, you know.
Well, Jordan, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us, and keep sitting down and keep doing that work, because it's really great, and I look forward to see what you come up with next.
Well, yeah, I really appreciate talking to you, and it was a good conversation. Thank you.
This has been The How, The Why with John Barrett Ingalls. The show is produced by Kevin Stanek and yours truly, with production assistance by Sarah Becker. The How the Why theme music was composed and performed by Dan Record. Please consider supporting 1888 and our mission. Become an 1888 advocate by purchasing our books, participating in our programs, and pledging today. For more information, visit 1888.center. That's 1-888-CENTER. I want to remind you all to keep making art. Thank you.